Our reading this morning is taken from the second letter of Paul to the Corinthians. It's a passage that, given the choices for today, I thought most aptly fit where we are as a congregation, as individuals, and I think something perhaps that we may draw from this in the strengthening of our own faith and awareness of God's presence with us. This from chapter 12. It is necessary to boast. Nothing is to be gained by it. But I will go on to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a person in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that such a person, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, was caught up into paradise and heard things that are not to be told, that no mortal is permitted to repeat. On behalf of such a one, I will boast. But on my own behalf, I will not boast, except of my weaknesses. But if I wish to boast, I will not be a fool, for I will be speaking the truth. But I refrain from it so that no one may think better of me than what is seen in me or heard from me, even considering the exceptional character of the revelations. Therefore, to keep me from being too elated, a thorn was given to me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from being too elated. Three times I appealed to the Lord about this, that it would leave me. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness." And so I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of the Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong. The word of the Lord. This reading has been a part of my formation from the time I was in high school and seminary. And it's a reading that I always focused on to understand or try to understand something that is somewhat of a mystery. That whenever I am weak, that's when God can be strong. And I know we've come a long way because about 6 months ago, coming up Route 8 on the highway, there was one of those billboards that said, "Remember that when you are weak, that's when God can be really strong." The message seems obvious, but you and I this morning have prayed some things together that I think might be challenging to our own experience. For example, in the call to worship, we said, "In any circumstance, whatever the need, God is there." We said, "In my weakness, fatigue, and failure, God is my strength. When I am sad and grieving, alone and afraid, God is my refuge. When life is hard and I want to quit, God's power sustains me. I was lost, but God rescued me." In typing up those words and thinking about this morning, I could not help but consider the fact that asking you to say those words might be very challenging. Because it's my experience listening to people in their lives. Whatever goes on in their lives, if it's something very positive, you know, occasionally there will be a thanks be to God. But whenever something goes wrong, we all look for the God that somehow doesn't seem to show up when we really want God to show up, at least not the way we think God should show up according to our need. And so knowing the human experience, I thought this morning I could pass on to you something that I've wrestled with my whole life, but something that I think makes a whole lot of sense when we talk about having a deepening faith life and somehow experiencing God in various ways. The reading tells us that Paul experienced somebody who had had kind of a mystical experience. And in his words, he describes a person having an encounter with God or having such an exceptional intimacy with God that to him was revealed something that people would never understand. Part of the mystery was given to him, and that mystery should not be repeated because there were no ears that would really understand them. Paul himself says, you know, I've also had some kind of closeness with God, and certainly I put before you the things I have revealed to you about God in his writings and in his prayers and in his preaching. Certainly he has revealed something about God in addition to what Jesus had revealed to us in his life. But he also says, I can't boast about that. In fact, nobody can boast about that. Because basically, as I've said so many times, in spiritual life, in a relationship with God, there's no success or failure. There just is. So wherever we are in the experience of God, God is as present to us as to anyone else. And I do believe that God in God's way reveals to each one of us things that we would understand that perhaps other people listening to it, they might not understand. But with that in mind, I think it's important to recognize a couple of things that take place in this little passage. When Paul talks about the thorn in his side, I've read many interpretations of what the thorn is. Some suggest that it was he had some kind of a sexual problem. Some have suggested he was an alcoholic. Some have said he had some kind of inner thoughts that really worked against his having a desire for God alone. There are many, many suspicions. Paul doesn't tell us what it is. But I know one of the realities he's getting at, and we see it all the time, is there's something in life that many times will bring us a sense of humiliation. If not just in the knowledge of it ourselves, perhaps in the fear that it would be known by anyone else. And were it known by anyone else, we would truly be humiliated. One of the things I will suggest as a good example is alcoholism and the AA process. Not because it's the only, but because it shows something very, very significant. When a person who is an alcoholic, and alcoholism really has a lot of genetic components to it, so it's not necessarily something that someone chooses, but predispositions lead people into an alcoholic approach to life and all the consequences that come with it. When a person enters the AA process, the very first step of someone trying to deal with the alcoholism in his life or her life is to accept that I am totally powerless, and I open myself up to what they call God, higher power, a reality that is beyond me. Richard Rohr has said that AA and the 12 steps is the best religious experience that anyone can have, because the whole process leads us from an acknowledgement of my weakness. And when I stand before a group of people and say, my name is John and I am an alcoholic, there's something humiliating about that reality. That first step is a real cruncher, because we own the humiliation and all the social stigma that goes along with that problem. But what happens very quickly in its own time is a person moves from humiliation and through the steps becomes humble. There's a difference between humiliation and humble. Humiliation is devastatingly negative. Humble acknowledges that I am not in this alone, and that there are possibilities yet to be explored that I need to learn. And when a person goes through the first part of the program and coming into a place of humility, taking a sense or a stance in humility, the next step is an awareness of vulnerability. How vulnerable I become because I expose myself to those whom I have hurt. I confess who I really am, and I begin to live who I really am as a person like Paul, who will spend all of his life with a thorn in his side. It will never go away, but it may never have the power and control it had. That's a good example of how humiliation can lead to a transformation of life. And we've talked about transformation of life over and over again. Perhaps you don't have a thorn in your life. Perhaps there is nothing that occupies a big space in your life where you somehow know you cannot progress or you cannot move. Or maybe you feel powerless. Or it's a great weakness in your life. The truth is, as Paul is describing it, the journey, brothers and sisters, that we take in a relationship with God may begin with humiliation, which is why in the wisdom of the churches, there's always a space for confession and forgiveness. But very quickly moves to humility, because before God, who am I? What am I? To the world, I may be the richest, the most powerful, the most influential, the most controlling, the most ever-present figure in the world. Before God, we are all the same, and I am just one person seeking an openness to God. And in humility, I stand before God and wait, along with my thorn, to discover what it means for me to be vulnerable. I'll tell you about a man I knew. I've known for many years. In fact, I was his confessor. He's a well-known person, so I can't give you too many details about his life. But interestingly, this guy was reared with a very, very angry and nasty father. And because there was brutality and there were all kinds of things going on in the family that were negative, this man grew up with a great thorn that hits him in the face every day of his life because of who he is. This man has a hard time trusting. He doesn't trust, especially people who would decide they want to be close to him. He's afraid of intimacy, but he also is afraid of himself, of meeting himself again. And so every day, this guy gets up, and he's now advanced in years. He gets up every day to be a good pastor. And every day, when he encounters people, he comes up against this well of weakness in who he is. And the only way he can function, and the only way he does pastor people, and as a result of it, he is a very famous, powerful, dynamic figure in the world. The only way is that he has learned what it means to be vulnerable to God and vulnerable to the world. It keeps him humble. But every encounter in his life brings him to that very dangerous precipice for him of getting totally lost, except that he depends on God. And so far, God has done wonderful things for him. And I believe God can do wonderful things for all of us, whatever it is that holds us, whatever it is that binds us up, whatever it is that makes us feel somewhat less worthy, whatever it is that we don't want people to know because it would be humiliating. Every day is an invitation to humility. to accept who I am. And in that place, where it is so overwhelming, I realize how vulnerable I am and how much I need to be opened to the possibilities that God offers. I want to read you a little quotation I found this week from our friend Henry Nouwen, with whom we spent Lent this year. And this is from his book, Bread for the Journey. And he's talking about the journey that all of us have going through this life, whether as spiritual people, religious people, or as agnostics. There's a message. He says this: life is precious, not because it is unchangeable like a diamond, but precisely because it is vulnerable, like a little bird. To love means to love its vulnerability, asking for care, attention, guidance, and support. Life and death are connected by vulnerability. The newborn child and the dying elder both remind us of the preciousness of our lives. Let us not forget the preciousness and the vulnerability of life during those times when we are powerful, successful, and very popular. No one of us likes to consider weakness. Nobody finds any kind of delight in looking at things that need changing or things that remind us where we have been, not knowing where we are going. But if Jesus offered us anything, in the words of St. Paul, there is a truth to what Paul is saying. For every one of us, I find that if I am content with my weakness, then whenever I am weak, that is when God can be powerful, because it's no longer about me. It's about what God has in hand for me. I hope that these words encourage you. They do me. And whatever it is that may keep you bound up, know that when God says, I love you as you are, that is the full truth. There's nothing you need to do, nothing you need to change to accept that love, except if you do, it will bring you to a place of vulnerability to your life and to God. Amen. You are right on time.